You're listening to the cycling podcast coverage of the 2025 Vuelta a España, brought to you in association with Lloyds. This is one of the busiest periods of the cycling season, with the third and final Grand Tour taking the riders from Italy to Spain in the Vuelta, and it won't be long before a stellar field lines up for the Lloyds Tour of Britain, which starts in Suffolk on September the 2nd and finishes in Cardiff 5 days later. It's set to be another major event in the Welsh cycling calendar, because earlier this year, British Cycling confirmed that the 2026 and 2027 National Road Race Championships, sponsored by Lloyds, will take place in Wales. After the success of this year's championships held in Ceredigion, where Millie Cousins, Zoe Baxted, Ethan Hayter and Sam Watson were among the riders to win coveted national titles, the prospect of Britain's best riders racing on Welsh roads, battling for the honour of wearing the famous champion stripes, is something to look forward to over the next couple of seasons. It also demonstrates Lloyds' commitment to cycling. Lloyds, there at every stage. Now let's join Daniel for our Vuelta coverage.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the cycling podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Sérieux, t'as mangé des cannolis ce matin?
Cet après-midi, un petit? Pas le dire. Ouais.
Buenas tardes, Michele Pelacci.
Buenas tardes, Daniele.
Vamos, Michele. Before we heard your voice, we heard a French person speaking. Friend of the podcast, Julien Pinot, brother of Thibaut Pinot, performance director, kind of technical director at Groupama FDJ, and it was an excellent day for him. What was he talking about? What was I talking to Julien about? Cannoli, the famous Sicilian dessert. There is a link. Just hold your horses, it's coming. We know that Julien, this has been a bit of a running joke on the podcast for years, he's passionate about Sicilian desserts, cannoli. And whenever we see him, we ask him, you know, well, certainly when we see him in Italy, we ask him whether he's been eating cannoli. And his belief is that they bring luck. And he managed to get some today. I don't know where, I don't know when. We're, of course, a long way from Sicily. We're in the extreme northwest of Italy, but he did manage to eat some cannoli today. And what happened later on, Michele, you can spoiler it, you can tell the listeners what happened. Who won?
David Goudou won. His rider, his main rider,
there you go,
the guy who seems in the last few years been great just at the Vuelta a España.
Well, he went well. Good thing that Giro d'Italia is leaving Italy tomorrow, because otherwise Julien would weigh 250 kilos by the end of Vuelta a España, because cannoli are very rich in calories, aren't they? But, Michele, I said we're in the extreme northwest of Italy. Explain to the listeners, well, what we can see at this very moment. Where are we recording?
We are at the footstep of a couple of valleys. They are called Valle Graie. The Alpi Graie are the mountains, the part of the Alps where we are surrounded here. It's very green and lush, but the forests are everywhere here. Not many civilizations. So, as we said yesterday, Ceres is pretty small, less than 1,000 inhabitants. Above here is Pian della Mussa. It's popular among cycling fans because Jarno Widar won last year in Giro Next Gen. Up here in Pian della Mussa, we are at the top, at the footsteps of this climb.
Michele, this is a part of Italy that's, well, I think I can speak for a lot of people here at the Vuelta a España. I need to keep reminding myself that it's the Vuelta a España, not the Giro d'Italia. A lot of us here are unfamiliar with, of course, we've been to Piemonte, this region of Italy, many times, but not this particular valley. And a lot of us have been wondering, asking ourselves today, what the hell the Vuelta a España is doing up here. We're going to have a bit of a chat about that and a sort of final analysis of the Vuelta's 3 days. Of course, we start in Piemonte still tomorrow, but three starts and finishes to this point in Piemonte, how it's gone down with the locals, how we felt about it, what exactly it was doing in Ceres today, but that all comes later, as does our analysis of Salt Bay's tremendous victory. Of course, this is another sort of running joke on the cycling podcast. Certainly, as far as the Vuelta a España is concerned, David Gourdou's resemblance with, I can't remember what you say in English, to the Turkish restaurant impresario, restaurateur, much maligned, not very popular these days, who, Michele, I learned, is just about to open a restaurant in Milan. And this has caused quite a lot of controversy, polemica. He's not necessarily welcome in Milan as far as a lot of the locals are concerned. Antonio Cassano, famous Italian footballer, used to play for your local team Parma and your other team AC Milan. He recently went to one of Salt Bay's other restaurants, and when they got the bill for, I think it was €880, he was asked how he'd enjoyed the meal, and he said, "I really enjoyed it, but I'm not coming back because it was too bloody expensive." Well, everyone knows that Salt Bay's restaurants are a bit of a rip-off, so I don't know what he was doing there. Anyway.
You were agitating, Daniel, the mix zone at the finish line, screaming, "Salt Bay is going to win! Salt Bay is going to do it!"
Yeah.
And he did.
In remarkable fashion. But the day started in, well, remarkable, regrettable fashion, shall we say, because we woke to the news, and Visma Lisebike woke to the news that they had been the victims of a robbery overnight at their hotel, the Novotel, in the north of Turin. We knew that they'd had lots of bikes stolen. We didn't know exactly how many. It had been reported there were 18 stolen. But at the start this morning was a frantic start for Visma Lisebike because they had to get their riders on bikes. There was one fewer Visma Lisebike rider at the start today because Axel Zingler was not starting. We saw him have those problems yesterday. We talked about how he had to sort of put his shoulder back in. He finished, I think, 23 minutes down on stage two, but he didn't start this morning. So that was one less rider to cater for. But the robbery, Michele, we wanted to hear more about it, find out exactly what was going on. From the Visma Lisebike team manager this morning, Richard Plugger, he was at the start, and you're going to hear from him now, and from Matteo Jorgensen, who fortunately, happily, well, did have a bike to ride the stage with. So here are Richard Plugger and Matteo Jorgensen this morning in San Maurizio Canavese.
We woke up this morning and then we saw that the truck was broken into and that a couple of bikes were stolen. I cannot, you know, the police is still, it's under investigation, so they asked me not to share too many details. And so, yeah, there's a couple of bikes being stolen, and that's very sad. And but we are fortunately, we had our mechanics worked really hard to make sure that we have enough bikes, not only bikes to race, but also spare bikes to start today. And Jonas's bike was still there, so that was the good news. Yeah, most of them still have the number one bike, if you would like to call it, but we have also built second bikes, or the second bike was still there, which is kind of the same as also a number one bike. And they will arrive in any minute because the mechanics worked really hard to make sure that we have a couple of bikes, not only the first bike, but also the second spare bike, and even the first spare bike and the second spare bike. So they are doing a great job now. And also, by the way, with the help of Little Trek and Movistar, who were in our hotel, they were very helpful this morning to help us out to be here in time. You know, in my time, when I was at the AIGSP, we always asked the Grand Tour organizers to get security at the hotels. That was not the case here. The hotel themselves did something, but apparently not enough. And yeah, we do a lot. Our truck is almost impossible to break into. But the severe violence they used this morning, if you see what happened, you know, it's so incredible. It's almost impossible to prevent this, but we should take other measures, and I think the organizers at least should make sure that the hotels where we are appointed to have good security and safeguard our materials. But we also as teams should do more ourselves to prevent this, or that the bikes can be recovered more fast. And we have bike finder is a sponsor of us, and maybe we should put it in all the bikes or something. But it's Yeah, it's very sad that this is necessary.
No, I'm not on my number one race bike. This is, I think, my fourth bike that they built up this morning. They stole 18 bikes. I think they left three of the race bikes and then a couple other spare bikes. And Axel, they actually left no bikes. So it was, it was an interesting morning to wake up to. And a lot of the staff was chaotic this morning and trying their best. The mechanics were trying their best to build a bunch of bikes, so they got it done, and we at least have each bike today to race, and more will come in the next few days. The funny part is they didn't understand how they were stolen, because they were up until like 1:30 still working on bikes last night because the power went out and they had a lot of problems last night. We got home, first of all, from the race at 9 p.m., and then they were up until 1:30, so they were surprised to wake up in the morning and see that all the bikes were gone. But they work really hard, and yeah, they're a huge part. I mean, without them, I would not have a working bike, I can tell you. I don't know how to work on bikes. Tested the bike out this morning. We all kind of were doing some rides by the buses to see if all the bolts were tight, and it should be all good to go.
Pelacci, worth spending a couple of minutes on this, I think, because, well, there we had Richard Plugger say that he didn't want to divulge too many details because this is an ongoing case. Matteo Jorgensen then telling us that there were 18 bikes that had been stolen, and it was obviously a hectic day. A couple of things just wanted to pick up on in there. Shouldn't be flippant about this, but Bicycle Thieves is an extremely famous Italian film, neorealist film, post-war, set in post-war Rome, it was chosen as the greatest film of all time by Sight and Sound magazine, which is a very popular film magazine. Vittorio De Sica was the director of that. But this was not a fictional bicycle theft, this was a real bike theft. And, well, Richard Plugger talking there about the AIGCP, that's the team's organization, them previously having had an arrangement with the Grand Tour organizers whereby security, they would put on extra security to stop this kind of thing happening. And he was sort of suggesting, well, asking why that was no longer the case. I asked the current, because Richard Plugger was the AIGCP president up until March, I think, 2024. I asked the current president, Brent Copeland, about this afternoon, and he said to me he had never heard of that agreement that Richard Plugger seems to be referring to. It was one he would love to see. Perhaps I could ask for a copy, Brent Copeland said. The fact is the organisers cannot take responsibility for the theft of teams' personal goods. We've tried many times in the past, but it's legally impossible. What we do request, however, is the organisers' support with as much security as possible, considering their available budget, and in these cases, they do not take responsibility. It's unfortunate, but that is the way it is. We had the same issue 3 years ago, he said, with San Remo, and his team, Jaco Alula, were the victim of a theft. He said 3 years ago. But this is something we see, unfortunately, with, I suppose, increasing regularity. Yeah. There were lots of figures I saw bandied about today about how much it would cost or how much it would cost a Visma Elisa bike. Figures ranging from €250,000 to €400,000. Of course, Cofidis Pelacci at the Tour de France, they were the victims of a theft. And what I didn't know, and Brent also told me this afternoon, was that they were able to recover some of their bikes. Because the GPS or the trackers that were used to obviously find out when riders crossed the line, they were reactivated the following day when the TV aeroplanes went up. I don't know if this is making sense, but this was basically how some of their bikes were found again, discarded close to where they had been stolen. And some of the Visma Elisa bikes were also recovered. I think three of them, again, were recovered close to the hotel.
Super interesting stuff. It sort of allows us to deviate from the actual racing and gave us stories for this morning. We were eager for stories coming in San Maurizio Canavese. We were looking for bikes above the team cars. There were none. And we were like, are they going to have to ride today's stage on Frankenstein bikes? Bikes with, I don't know, a mountain bike, a handlebar, or, just spare parts put together, trying to assemble seven bikes because they're down one rider. They were pretty good, I have to admit. Pretty great job by the mechanics. Bikes look fantastic, amazing bikes. One thing.
I think they were, in most cases, they managed to get the riders on their usual setups.
One thing they gave us was at minus 75 kilometers, a long ripresa, inquadratura.
Shot.
An angle, yeah. On the tettuccio della macchina, on the bike.
On the roof rack.
Exactly. And the bikes still look good up there as well. So probably their spare bikes are still good.
Did you expect
so
them to look like Pilacci?
I don't know.
Did you expect
know
them to be sort of £100, €100 Decathlon mountain bikes?
Some BMX, some something like that.
Well, that was a sort of, well, not a happy ending for Visma Lisa bike, but certainly it could have been worse. I don't know what would have happened if they hadn't been able to obtain the bikes in time, but fortunately they were able to ride the stage and they rode it pretty well, as we're about to find out. Michele, it's that time of the day when you tell us exactly what happened on today's stage in El Jamonómetro.
El Jamonómetro de Michele Pelacci.
Michele, first things first, how many hamones, how many hams, please?
This stage to me deserves a 3 vegan slices of prosciutto Daniele, Gen Z prosciutto, not the quintessential great prosciutto di Parma, but just the fake version of it.
Because
it was no real ciclismo, it was more of a hyper-fattened ciclismo. Don't get me wrong, still healthy enough. Today, for the 3 hours of ciclismo, you could do something else.
Well, it was perfect for the time-crunched Gen Z cycling fan, the TikTok generation, wasn't it? Because they could have spent the whole day doing something else and then sort of tuned in for the last 30 seconds and very much enjoyed the spectacle.
No time to grow your pigs to produce the prosciutto, just hyper-fattening them. And yeah, you know, it's not great. We don't like that in Parma, of course.
So what happened? Yeah. Go on.
Here we are. Outside of Alex Zingel of Visma, it was Jorge Arcas of Movistar, who did not start today's stage from San Maurizio Canavese, home of Giovanni Brunero. 3-time Giro d'Italia winner, more on him later, maybe. It was a pretty similar beginning of the stage to the previous ones, with an early breakaway, escaping the peloton, kept them on a tight leash. There were 4 baroudeurs. They were Luca Van Boven of Intermarché Wanty, Alessandro Verre of Arkea BMB, Patrick Gamper of Jayco, Sean Quinn of EF. Verre won the KOM sprint in Isiglio. He was wearing the Polkadot jersey since the leader of the general classification was Vingegaard. He is wearing La Roja. Now Verre is also the actual leader of the Maillot de la Montagna. The breakaway gap never went over 2 minutes. The last rider to be caught was Sean Quinn. Then the approach to the final climb to Ceres started. Little Trek pulled the whole day at the front of the peloton. They were using Craig Anderson, Bajoli and Ciccone himself on the last climb. In the final kilometer, the peloton was very stretched out. Mats Pedersen entered the last bend in first position, but finally, at the end, to everyone's surprise, it was David Goudou who emerged victorious.
Salt Bay victorious at the Vuelta a España. Pedersen was second. I'm going to run down Pelacci, the first few positions. Jonas Vingegaard in third place. One of these fantastic hybrid finishes where we got GC riders, punchers and sprinters as well. Giulio Ciccone was fourth. A bit of a surprise name in fifth. Jordan Labrousse of Decathlon was fifth. Orlius Aular, one of those sprinters, in sixth place. Santiago Buitrago, he was seventh. Bahrain victorious rider. Egan Bernal, again finishing well on an explosive finish. Bjorn Kurt. Kurt, I think, is how you pronounce his name. He's an Englishman, young Englishman, very promising. Team Picnic, Post NL in 9th, Jai Hindley 10th. Pelacci, we've checked and double-checked. We are certain today, after a bit of a cock-up by me yesterday, that no GC riders lost time today. Maybe you might want to read something nonetheless into where they all finished. Tom Pidcock, he talked this morning about sort of targeting today's stage, maybe to a lesser extent than yesterday, but he was well down in 23rd place. I'm also going to mention Joao Almeida, 28th, not the most explosive rider, of course. 31st, Ben O'Connor. Mikel Landa, 33rd. And Antonio Tiberi, he was the only real big GC loser yesterday. He lost 21 seconds yesterday. Did better today, but was still well down 43rd place. And a lot of these guys, I would suggest to you, Pelacci, we'll talk about this, they got a little bit lucky in the sense there could easily have been gaps, and they had riders. I noticed Santiago Buitrago closing a big gap at one point, and they have riders like him to thank for making sure that everyone came in. Certainly a very big group came in together. In the GC, Vingegaard leads on the same time as David Gaudu, so it will depend who finishes, well, higher up the rankings tomorrow. That will determine who wears the red jersey in the team time trial the following day. So we've got Gaudu second on the same time, Ciccone third, 8 seconds down, Egan Bernal fourth, 14 seconds down, and then we get a big group, all the riders basically who have not had bonus seconds so far, and they're on 16 seconds down. I think that pretty much concludes things. The important news as far as the standings are concerned, Verre is in the King of the Mountains jersey, and the Young Riders jersey is still held by Juan Ayuso. Oh, and in the points competition, Jonas Vingegaard now leads, so presumably Giulio Ciccone, who's in second place on that competition, will wear that jersey tomorrow. Pelacci, let's hear from a teammate of David Gaudu, shall we? This was a very enlightening, insightful interview, I thought, by Stefan Kung, King Kung, after the finish line, talking about Salt Bay, David Gaudu, and his excellent day at the Vuelta a España.
Well, Stefan, a bit of a surprise for a lot of people watching today. Surprise for you?
After what he showed yesterday, not so much. I mean, we went to have a look at this final on Friday, and already there, I told him, like, this could be a good final for him. And again, this morning in the briefing, I said, look, it's a perfect final for you. I said, yeah, but against Pedersen, I have no chance. I said, look, there is a... You have three switchbacks in the last K, and for an 80-kilo guy to accelerate each time from 20 to 45K an hour, it's way harder than for you, a 60-kilo guy, believe you can do this. And honestly, I was also a little bit surprised when I hear the speaker announcing him as a winner, but on the other hand, I know that he's capable of such things.
And I think I've just heard you say to our French colleagues that you had to give him a bit of a pep talk yesterday as well. Things weren't going so well yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he had a rough season this season with the Giro, or Tirreno didn't go to plan, then Giro neither. Then he didn't do the Tour de France. Tour de l'Ain, the first race back after altitude, we can say it was catastrophic. And so yesterday when it was raining, he had a few crashes in these kind of conditions. He was like really, yeah... He was really not in a good state. And then I told him, look, now the road is dry again with 10K to go. Believe in yourself. Like, for everyone, it's difficult. And then he said, yeah, I do my thing. And then I just tried to stay around him. And I think yesterday he won his confidence back. And today he was able to have confidence in himself, in the teammates. And yeah, it worked out, so I'm very happy for him. I think it's very, very nice, and also for the team, obviously.
And just lastly, what is it about him in the Vuelta? He seems to have a love affair with this race. Why does it work so well for him here?
Yeah, I think obviously the Tour de France is difficult as a French rider, especially since there is no Thibaut Pinot and Romain Bardet anymore. There is always a lot of attention, a lot of... Yeah, I don't know. I know we shouldn't look at the social media, but also there is... It's different when you're French, let's say like that. As soon as you have a bad day or a bad race, like, everybody comes swinging at you, and I'm sure tonight everybody's gonna praise him up into the sky. It's just how the French people are, a little bit more emotional maybe than for example as we Swiss people. And so yeah, I mean, he puts a lot of pressure on himself, obviously, as well, and we all want to do good. He also wants to do good. He also wants to prove himself, and I think here he's just a little bit more liberated. But to be honest, also yesterday's and today's final were perfect for his kind of abilities.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Well, Pelacci, some fascinating stuff we heard before the break there from Stefan Kuhn, just taking us inside the mind of Salt Bay and taking us sort of behind the scenes or some of the planning for this stage. And I did find it interesting that Groupama came to recon this finish on Friday, and it was in the course of doing that that, well, certainly Stefan Kuhn, he came to the conclusion that this would be a really good finish for David Gourdou. I mean, David Gourdou, we think of him as a climber, but he has had very good results on explosive finishes. Lest we forget, he beat Wout van Aert in a sprint finish in the Dauphiné in 2022. I mean, that was largely because Wout van Aert celebrated too early, but we've seen this from David Gourdou before. The thing that is sometimes confounding and sort of difficult to predict this sort of result from David Gourdou is his inconsistency. He's a rider who runs very hot and cold, and he's run very hot and cold this year as well. And in the press conference, Pelacci, he told us a little bit about why this season has been so up and down. A lot of crashes in the first part of the season. Then, of course, he rode the Giro d'Italia. That didn't go particularly well either, because he had a hand injury, didn't he?
Yeah, I read a quote. It was terrifying. From the Giro d'Italia, he said, after a fall, I have a hole in my hand. I don't know why it's always my hands that suffer the worst damage. You could even see the tendon of his hand.
And that was a setback early in the year. He, as I understood it today, speaking to like say Julien Pinot from Groupama and listening to David Gourdou, as I understand it, it was sort of an open question of whether he was going to do the Tour de France, and they decided after the Giro, he was so sort of beaten up that they decided it would be better to give the Tour de France a miss and for him to come to the Vuelta a España. The Vuelta a España, of course, where he has very good memories. He won at La Farapone in 2020. We're going back there later in the race. Also last year he rode an outstanding race. Was he fourth on general classification?
Possibly, yeah.
Fourth in the final standings, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. We're just going to check that 1 second.
He was sixth.
Sixth, sorry.
With second in a stage.
Second in a stage, but rode really well and really consistently last year. But even in the last few weeks, he's been very inconsistent, because in the month of July, he went away to sort of prepare for the Vuelta a España, came down from altitude, went to the Tour de l'Ain, expecting good results, and had an absolute shocker. And the staff at Groupama, likes of Stefan Kuhn, they have been, or I refer to the sort of pep talk that Stefan Kuhn gave him even yesterday on the stage, but they have been trying to get him to believe in his chances at this Vuelta a España. And well, it's very, very early days, isn't it? 3 days in. But you can see that he's in really good form. And we'll come on to this maybe in a minute, Pelacci. I think today was another, I said yesterday was a good litmus test of everyone's form. It was also a good litmus test of how explosive all the various riders are. Some are obviously more explosive than others. But I think today showed us clearly that Gourdou and Vingegaard are both very much al dente.
I think Gourdou today had, of course, great legs, but he outsmarted everyone. If you take a look at how he approached the last bend, he was in third position behind Vingegaard and Pedersen, and he sort of took a shortcut. He was doing la curva più stretta, the last hairpin. Was more,
he went on the inside, he shortened it.
Exactly. That was marked by him, and probably, I mean, Vingegaard in his press conference had Gourdou dive bombed that into that corner, but really smart move by him. And we can also mention the fact that he's lighter than most of his opponents today. More light than Pedersen, of course, and his last kilo were able to push him. He didn't have to revamp his action. Remy Cavagna, after the finish line, there was a gravel, strange, exit from the mix zone at the finish line. Coming down, Remy Cavagna told me that he was impressed. He was impressed. He did not expect his teammate to win here. And it's a great win for the team, right? That can be, because now he has 0 seconds. He's 0 seconds down from Vingegaard. If tomorrow David Gourdou finishes 8 positions ahead of Jonas Vingegaard, he's in La Roja.
Pelacci, when I say to you Groupama, off the top of your head, would you consider them to have had a good season or not? Without looking at statistics, And how many victories would you guess that Groupama have had this year?
You know, they race a lot in France, and there are many races in France. I'd say 8 wins, maybe?
They've had 11 wins, but today was only the second World Tour victory. And I would suggest it's a team in transition as well. Well, we heard during the Tour de France that Marc Madiot is no longer, well, he's doing less of the sort of business. They've got someone else on board now who's more the business manager of the team. And it's a team where some of the foreign riders are leaving. It seems to be becoming even more, for certainly next year. And the likes of Lewis Askey, for example, are leaving. Kung himself is rumoured to be leaving. And it's going to be even more of a sort of French team next year. But those two World Tour victories, it's been a fairly sort of thin vintage so far this season. So very much a welcome victory today. Talking of, well, French, very much sort of dyed-in-the-wool French teams, we've got a dyed-in-the-wool Italian. Well, you are as well, Pilacci, but someone else has just appeared in our midst. It's Ciro Scognamiglio.
My mentor.
Ciro, how the devil are you?
I mean, Michele now just told me mentor. For me, it's an honor. But you know, dear listener, that I'm a mentor for a lot of persons, a huge amount of persons. So it's not a surprise for me.
Ciro is wearing a wonderful Vuelta a España. Escalador de la Vuelta, the climber of the world, the king, the sort of king of the mountains of the Vuelta a España. You don't like mountains. No. It's ironic.
Clearly ironic, because mountains are not my cup of tea. But in this way, sometimes I can give you also another impression to the public. And maybe there is the question, Ciro maybe has changed his mind? It's another question of this Vuelta, but listeners, do you already know which is the answer?
Ciro, we've got an audience. We've got Fabio Aru, former Vuelta a España winner, who is he's showing us his support, for particularly support for Ciro, I think.
Very strange guy, because he's from Sardinia, the most beautiful sea by far in the world, and he likes mountains. So, you know, with Fabio, also for this reason, sometimes I was upset with him, but it's a friend. So.
Ciro, serious business. Fabio has got off to get his car. I thought we were going to have a cameo from a Vuelta winner there. But Ciro, what did you make of the last kilometre today?
I mean, I was convinced that my bet was Mats Pedersen, also because Little Trek showed really an impressive work. Also, Giulio Ciccone made a great work. But as a matter of fact, David Godu was better, I think, in the last corner, last 100 meters. And so I think he at the end deserved the victory.
Ciro, if you had the chance to talk or see Ciccone's face after the finish line, did you get the sense of frustration in his eyes? What do you think?
I mean, maybe a little bit after the finish line, because maybe, well, Giulio also, I don't know, maybe his reflection could be, well, on this kind of arrival, I saw David Gadou first, Jonas Vingegaard third. So maybe also I'm interpreting a little bit the mind of Giulio. Maybe also I could have played my card, but as a matter of fact, Mats was really close, and in my opinion, David Gadou was better, because he was better in the last corner. So I mean, at the end, it's good for him.
Ciro, later in the podcast, Michele and I were going to talk about general impressions of this grande salida in Piemonte. You usually, when we talk to you about the Giro d'Italia, you can't really spilanciarti, as you can't really be very objective, because you have to think about who is your employer. Obviously, they run the Giro d'Italia. You are liberated now, I would suggest. So you have no vested interest in Unipublic or ASO, who own the Vuelta a España. So you can tell us what you really think of this Gran Salida in Piemonte.
Not bad, in my opinion. Maybe I don't want to say, obviously, we are in Italy, not, for example, in Denmark or in Netherlands, when obviously you normally see more public, because Denmark, Netherlands are countries in which bikes, as I think maybe there are more bikes than human beings. In Italy, it's not like that. But as a matter of fact, considering also that we are in August, normally a month in which cities in Italy are empty because a lot of people are still on the beach or in mountains or in holidays, because you know that Italy, the month of August in Italy is really the month of holidays. Mm. In other countries, people split a little bit more holidays than Italian. So in my opinion, the atmosphere was good. For example, in Novara, I see a good crowd. And also, for example, San Maurizio Canovese this morning, the atmosphere...
Yeah, good crowd. There are a few things about it we still don't fully understand. Your former colleague, Claudio Ghisalberti, wrote an interesting blog earlier about RAI, Italian television, not televising the Vuelta, so that limits its appeal. 4.5 million euros the region of Piemonte has supposedly spent on this Giro d'Italia, bringing it to places like Ceres, which, you know, no disrespect to the inhabitants of Ceres, nice little village, but it's not a big tourist destination. There are more obvious places in Piemonte where the Vuelta you would think could have gone, but...
But my name is a question, but in every Grand Tour, sorry if maybe it's a kind of answer that normally a cyclist do after the finish line. I'm happy the team has did really a good job. But I must confess that in every Grand Tour, you have to choose 21 for 21 stages, more or less 42 places, a little bit less. And obviously, you could have chosen other ones.
Okay.
So it's a question maybe for...
Two more quick things, then we'll release you back into the wild, Ciro. Yeah. One, you've been busy. You're always busy looking for scoops, transfer scoops. Have you got anything for us?
Well, I mean, there is a big quarrel, we can call in this way, between Derek Ghi and... Israel Premier Tech and Ineos, that is the third part, and normally it's supposed to have Derek Ghi from next season, but I have the impression that this story is not over yet, maybe could over in a tribunal with lawyers. I have this impression. Yes.
Last thing, Ciro, this morning we were graced with the presence, by the presence of His Immensity. La sua immensità, His Majesty.
Radio Elia Viviani.
Radio Viviani, because he's a great talker, isn't he? Yes. And we're going to hear that in a minute, because he's the subject of today's chiacchierata del giorno. I thought that Elia could be closer to the front today. I know it wasn't really a stage for pure sprinters, but he was in good form. We asked him if he knew why you had christened him La Sua Immensità, beyond the obvious, beyond his immensity. He didn't really know. He just sort of knew that, well, this reflected the esteem in which you hold La Sua Immensità, Elia Viviani. But can you reveal anything else about why you decided to give him this nickname?
Because his, in a certain way, his charisma, I don't know which can be the possible translation of charisma.
Charisma is a good translation of charisma.
Because, you know, he's really, really professional, and he has always had a word for me. Also, for example, when he was upset after a defeat in a sprint, he told me, okay, we can talk later, but he always gave me a word. So this is important for my job.
Obviously. Ciro, if I tell you in 10 years, he is the president of the Italian Cycling Federation, what do you say?
In my opinion, he didn't want. Because it's a role... Also a political role, you know. I think that he has in mind another kind of role for him. A lot of people in Italy thinks about him as next coach of Italian track. But in my opinion, he imagines himself more as a team manager, a team principal, for example, not even for a team, maybe also for the Italian nations.
Wow.
For example, in this moment, this role is for Roberto Amadio, the former team manager of Viviani in Liquigas, at Liquigas time, the marvelous Liquigas with Sagan, with Viviani, with Nibali. I think that Elia imagine... this role for him, okay. but only in 1 or 2 years.
Okay.
I mean, a little bit later.
Anyway, Elia Viviani was the subject of today's Encuentro del Día. Ciro, it's been lovely to see you. Hopefully we'll see you again tomorrow.
At the start, I have to leave the question mark so far, dear listeners. Okay. I don't know. I want to be on spot no longer for this Vuelta, unfortunately, but I will be again in the Cycling Boss podcast.
Of
this
course,
is for sure.
Of course, it goes without saying. Gracias mille, Ciro.
El encuentro del día. The meeting of the day.
Elia Viviani, first of all, well, I should address you as His Majesty, because did you know that in Ciro Scognamiglio's telephone, your name or your number is under La Sua Immensità? La Sua Immensità. Did you know this?
Yeah, I know it. He called me always like this. No, but he say, then we need to see if he's right or not. But yeah, I can't go over any his rider. So we will see that. We will see in the future.
Where does this come from, La Sua Immensità?
It's just because of something big, no? Like a rider like do a lot in his career, and probably also as a person. So we have a good relationship. So it's coming from that. Good guy, good results. So the combination of.
Elia, a couple of days, because we know that Ciro is the expert on all things Elia Viviani. We asked him, is he continuing next year? And Ciro didn't seem to know. What's the answer?
Maybe. No, I was like really focused to do a good end of season, thanks to the team, just to permit me to come at really high level races like this one. And yeah, depend maybe more on the results. I want to continue if I'm competitive. If not, not. There is talk with Lotto. As you can imagine, with the rumors, can be difficult about the merge going on, or who gonna know this in the next few weeks. But yeah, like I said, I always say I want to continue until I'm competitive. I don't want to go around with the bike around the world for nothing. So, and also I will not swap to another role. So I do all my career winning races, and that is what I'm good to do. And some year more, some year less, but that is the sprinter life also. At one point, you don't take the risk you need to take sometimes. Also, the explosivity a little bit going down. You need to be smarter and moving well. Luckily, in this team, I have good guys to lead out me. So what I understand the last few years, so it's like if I have a good lead out, bring me there. I have still the kick to win. If not, I'm lost in the bunch. So I'm not anymore the young Elia where go inside every hole you can see with the handlebar. So, yeah, a bit more difficult. But if I'm there, I'm still think I can beat some top sprinter.
You say the explosiveness is going down. Now, Mark Cavendish, for example, later in his career, he said his numbers were better than ever. It's just that the other sprinters were also getting better. Tell us, I mean, what do your numbers show when you look at them now compared to your best years?
No, the number is still high. I mean, if you look, the numbers is still like the cycling is changed 100%. So now you need to sprint. You don't need to focus on the peak power. I mean, okay, this is important because the last 200 meters, if you don't have this, you can't win. But it's more about like the approach. It's a different cycling. I mean, it's like full gas every day. Every climb is never like an easy pace for us. And mainly the last few K. Now in the last 10K, you always need to do a lot of effort before your real sprint. That is the main difference, I think, because I agree with Cav. The numbers are there. When you do training, 1,500, 1,550 for me is around the good value to sprint is there. But in training, you train for a sprint and you train as a fresh. All these things in the race is totally different. So, but the main thing is like the approach. The approach is so high level now. And like, for example, day one, from 3K to go to this real sprint, probably I do two or three big sprint, and I have a good lead out, guys. So if you don't have this, it's still worse.
Last thing, Elia, have you enjoyed the Vuelta? It's confusing, isn't it? We keep thinking we're at the Giro d'Italia, but yeah, the Vuelta in Piemonte.
Yeah, I think I really enjoy. I really miss it, you know, that feeling 3 years without Grand Tour. So this helped a lot to start in Italy for me, because all the fans are on our side. I'm on my side, and yeah, it's pretty emotional for me. From the team presentation, day one, day two, now we are day three. So from tomorrow we start, and then Vuelta in Spain come. But I really like this race, so I will enjoy it. For sure, the big climber still need to come. But yeah, I will looking forward to arrive in Madrid and fight to arrive in Madrid 100%.
Perfetto. Thank you. Grazie.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Well, Pelacci, that was his immensity. Ilia Viviani. I said the other day, didn't I? I felt very embarrassed when the Prince Albert of Monaco appeared in our midst and I got in a right tangle with my recorder and stuff. And it was all very embarrassing. Now I feel as though, well, I should have maybe bowed to the Prince Albert of Monaco, but now every time I see Ilia Viviani, I feel as though I should treat him as royalty as well, given what we've just heard. But Pelacci, a few other things, a few other observations I would like from today's stage. You were in the press conference, Vingegaard's press conference. He seems to be very chipper, in a very upbeat mood, very relaxed, enjoying sort of, well, the more we always say the Vuelta a España is more relaxed, but he seems to be enjoying himself so far.
We did not talk about the intermediate sprint in Cuorgnier. It had in Palio up for grab,
yeah,
both points for the point jersey and bonus seconds. Vingegaard said he didn't know, he didn't remember at the, you know, in those meters, if how many guys were in front. So he said, I'm going to do the sprint. And the two bonus seconds that were up for grab, because the first two guys already were in the breakaway, were taken by Mats Pedersen, teammate of Giulio Ciccone, but they had a little, you know, kerfuffle, him and Ciccone, for this bonus sprint. I saw him pretty quiet. He said he did not want to necessarily keep the jersey today. He didn't want to give it to a GC guy, but I think if a stronger breakaway, which was an option, I was kind of slightly surprised that a stronger, more numerous breakaway did not go up the road today. He could have very calmly said, you know what, take the jersey and we'll see each other in the mountains.
Yeah, but Little Trek were always gonna ride today, weren't they? And they were always gonna commit. So that really forced Vingegaard. He didn't really have much choice in the matter. He's a bit more choice in maybe giving the jersey away tomorrow, because as I said, it really depends where Gourdou and Vingegaard finish and what will presumably be quite a big bunch that comes in together tomorrow, but we'll talk about that in just a moment. Pelacci, another rider I just wanted to mention briefly was Egan Bernal. We saw him finishing very close to the front yesterday. Again today, we said yesterday, I think, that he's an explosive rider, so it's not that surprising in itself, but he seems to be in really good form. I spoke to him briefly this morning, and well, we should also say that today was an important stage for him emotionally, because he revisited, in fact, he went past the house, the apartment where he used to live for 2 years when he was riding for the late great Gianni Savio's old team Celle Italia, and for 2 years he was a sort of adopted Piedmontese, and he went past the house in Boasco San Colombano del Belmonte.
You said it great.
Yeah, and there was a bit of a party there, organised by people he used to know, some Colombian music. That we know there was a big mural in San Colombano as well.
We saw several graffiti up the road. Fan club of Egan Bernal from Piedmont was here in the last climb as well in Ceres. Beautiful how this region adopted this great champ.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I know that you think he might finish on the podium here, but he faded in the Giro d'Italia, shall we say, earlier in the year, having started that race pretty well. He eventually finished seventh on general classification, but he talked about that this morning. He talked about how he's confident that he is not going to be as tired in the last week of the Vuelta as he was in the Giro. Why was he so tired at the end of the Giro? Well, he had a few crashes, at least one or two fairly significant crashes, and he felt as though that contributed to his fatigue. The Vuelta, of course, is a very different race. I mean, we've enjoyed the very late starts over the last couple of days, and there was a similar sort of amount of climbing when you tot up the total meters of altitude gain, but generally the stages are a little bit shorter. It's a lot less stressful. The transfers might not be quite as long, and hopefully he will feel a bit less fatigued in the final week, and we'll see how he gets on, Pelacci. But it's time, I suppose, to talk about tomorrow's stage. Let's do that now, shall we?
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Pelacci, tomorrow's stage.
It's interesting, Daniele. You just said that, and tomorrow we'll have one of the longest stages in Grand Tour racing this year, and the day after it will have 400 kilometers of transfer. But tomorrow we'll start in Susa, the entrance of the Val di Susa, of course, famous for its connection with France, you know, the no-TAV movement. They don't want high-speed trains from Turin to Lyon passing through the mountains.
For years this went on, didn't it? And Pelacci, the question is finally
being put. It's still going.
Is it still going? So, much like, what's it called? There's one being built in the UK. Is it HS2, which was supposed to go sort of all the way up the country, and now it was costing so much money that it's been sort of abridged, shall we say, and it's only going to Birmingham now, but a lot of sort of opposition to that. And similarly, in Italy, for decades now, there has been this proposal to have an even higher speed train than already exists from Italy into France. And is any of it being built?
Most of them is now ready.
Okay.
I think it's ready. So, from Susa to Voiron, 207 kilometers, three categorized climbs. The one starts right away. It's Puerto Exiles, then Montginevro, Lautare. We are in France, down from the 2,056 meters of Lautare to Grenoble, and then Voiron is just a neighboring city to Grenoble. What I think is going to happen, Daniele, it's probably not important, but riders will be dropped on Montginevro and Lautare, but the roads are pretty wide there. Everybody knows there. Lautare, of course, is a sort of send from the Galibier as well. You can make up for the time you lost on the uphill.
Yes, the question is who's going to work, Pelacci? And I think the destiny, the fate of tomorrow's stage is in the hands, once again, of Little Trek. Because we've talked about how when Mads Pedersen is here, when they commit, they really, really commit. And what they might try and do tomorrow is, well, set a hard enough pace or be sort of participants in pace setting on those two big climbs early on in the stage in such a way to get rid of Jasper Philipsen in particular. Or they could decide that it's too hard to control on those two climbs, particularly the first of the two climbs, uphill start, and that it is just a day to let a breakaway go and maybe conserve some energy in time for the team time trial, which of course is really important for them, with Ciccone going, well, is he going for the general classification? We're not entirely sure. That's a bit of an open question. But that's an option for them as well. I would suggest, I don't really see too many other teams who are going to want to control tomorrow's race from start to finish. You mentioned the length of it. A bit of tiredness will already be starting to kick in. And they have got that team time trial to think about the day after. You mentioned the finish in Voiron. There are a few riders who hail from the Alps, of course, and that area around Grenoble, Chambéry, those places. One of those riders is Nance Peters of Decathlon. And you spoke to him this morning, Pelacci. You spoke to him briefly about the stage, but you also spoke to him about his nickname. Let's remind ourselves of why Nance Peters is called Nance Peters.
Nance, I read that your name comes from the Nain le Berger. That, can you explain what it is? What's the story there?
En anglais, it's un feuilleton. It's a TV program. It's a team show. My mother looked this when she was younger.
And what was this about? What, who was Nance le Berger?
Je sais pas. Je sais même pas.
You were too young. Yeah.
Pelacci. Named after Nance le Berger, Nance the Shepherd, which is was sort of a hit French soap opera, wasn't it? Mm-hmm.
It was. Napeter does not speak great English, so he struggled to explain that.
Steady.
But, yeah, I could... You know, there are strange images of this shepherd. I have to go and find out more about this comedy. Maybe I like it.
I'm sure you probably will, Pelacci. Pelacci, you had some more interesting information. You teased this yesterday. You alluded to it yesterday. The Burgos Biache rider who was in the break yesterday, and he's the Egyptian link.
Sinuhe Fernandez.
Yes.
Name really, really comes. We were sort of linking that name to the Egyptian novel from the Middle Ages. And it's really from there, from that piece of literature we mentioned yesterday, and that made me love the Burgos Beache guys even more.
Even more. I think you might be adopted as a team member and they'll be giving you kits and a bike by the time we get to Spain. Pelacci, I said that we were going to sort of summarize the 3 days in Piemonte, but I've changed my mind, I'm going to propose we do that now tomorrow.
Huh.
And when we've got a fuller picture after the start in Susa tomorrow, when we've got a fuller picture of how these days have gone down with the locals and what we've made of them as well. I spoke this morning to Ivano Garelli, who is a bit of a friend of the podcast. He's not the president of the Piemontese Cycling Federation, he's the sort of press spokesperson, and he's also the president of the International Larry Warbass Fan Club. And Ivano sort of gave me some of his impressions this morning, but we'll maybe hear that tomorrow when we do sort of sum up these days in Piemonte. Last night we enjoyed some excellent Piedmontese cuisine yet again. Pelacci, highlights from that?
We were under a good porticato.
A portico.
Yeah, colonnade in...
in Fossano.
Downtown Fossano. We had a pretty solid meal. Not the best one we had here in Piedmont, but I liked it. You know, one thing we have to try this time instead, Daniele, will be torcetti di Lanzo. Sort of sweet grissini. They come from here. Torcetti.
Breadsticks.
Twisted. Yeah. So we have to try this one tonight.
Okay. We'll give that a go. Yes, Pelacci, we had, what did I have last night? I had a cacio e pepe, which most people know what that is. It's a cheese and pepper sauce, but with a bit of truffle as well. In fact, I posted a picture on Instagram. We've been enjoying the fantastic Piedmontese wines, of course. We had, it's a sort of indigenous grape variety, a rare grape variety last night. I forget the name of it. Rather than a dolcetto, a nebbiolo, or a barbera, which are the more common red Piedmontese grape varieties, but that was excellent. And more Piedmontese cuisine in store tonight. Pelacci, that's enough for today in Cerres. We'll be back tomorrow.
We will. Hasta mañana.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.